dials and stay tuned to 96.3. It's the October 14th, 2001 edition of Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides with Robert Norris and special guests from HOW, the Homeless on Wheels Association. Stay with us.
Financial anxiety for one of America's most beloved multi-billionaires. Of course, I'm talking about Bill Gates. And while some people may go about their daily lives without worrying about Bill Gates' financial problems, we in the Capital Steps are not that cold and heartless. We have decided tonight, with your permission, to stage a fundraiser to help the man out. We have brought with us some of the top international singing stars. Please welcome Diana Ross.
Oh, it's so nice to finally have an audience.
We also have Bob Dylan. Bob, how are you doing? This is very exciting. We have Michael Jackson. Michael, how are you tonight?
I'm holding my own.
Yeah, we kind of hoped you'd stop doing that. Okay. And finally, we have Bill Gates himself to participate in this historic fundraising event.
There comes a time when a judge named Jackson calls and you find you've made him really upset.
The Bill Gates Explorer is certainly the best for finding pictures on the internet.
It isn't right. They should break his company up, and the billions he should have to lose.
So raise your mouses and let's all double click to help the software we all use.
We all use Word. We all use Windows.
We all use browsers that allow
making, and doesn't that save you time?
Why should I build a better word? You're already mine.
The things that we'll use make us upset. Then we don't just break up the alphabet.
If you
like big rich things or big conglomerates. You just might break up Oprah Winfrey next.
All right, everybody, sing along with Bob Dylan.
Hey, out it will. But I'll be there. I'll hear
you.
There's not a company in the world that does what I do. So break us up, Judge Jack Stein. But I warn you, if you do, I won't run the top company in America. I'll run the top two.
Welcome to another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. That's the Capitol Steps coming at us. One bush, two bush, old bush, new bush. And we're going to have a few more little blurbies like that. I like satire. It isn't always immediately on point here for homeless civil rights in Santa Cruz or local issues. But it raises a smile anyway. And these days with papers full of terrorist-type propaganda, it's, to me, a welcome change, and I'm pleased to have it. We have with us a special guest today from a new organization that is forming to deal with increased repression of homeless folks, particularly homeless folks in their vehicles. And I'd like to have him introduce himself. Hey, David, see if your mic is working.
David?
Yeah, it's been working pretty well there. Sorry, I don't mean to blast. Say something else. Say hello.
Hello.
Very good. You got it. We're actually, you got a better mic than I do, or it's been differently calibrated. And David, you're a man who lives in your vehicle.
Yes, I do.
And I guess I ran into you while I've seen you around for a while. How long have you been in the Santa Cruz area?
I've been in the Santa Cruz area probably roughly 30 years or so, 25, 30 years or so.
So you're not one of those interlopers who rushed into town to take advantage of all our wonderful services.
I came over one night to watch the beach, and I haven't left. Just excursions in and out.
Huh. And you live in your vehicle?
I live in my motorhome, yes, I do.
And how long have you been, was that always the case, or is it a recent development?
That's a recent development over the last 3 or 4 months, but I've been homeless and living in camping and bicycling over the last probably six years or so, even to the point of living at the back 40, the old
Coral
campground,
Street,
open air shelter.
Yeah. You know, we've heard a lot of trash talk about the back 40, and then you've heard, perhaps maybe you haven't, but I've defended the back 40 on the show saying that even though there were problems there, people were able to help each other, and it was certainly better for a number of people than when it was dispersed by Kennedy and Rotkin in 1995 in December. Any perspective on that?
I think it's totally appropriate. It was more than just a place. It was a place for gathering. It was a place for people to be in contact with one another to make their ends happen. It was just wonderful, even though there were some problems, sanitation, fight, you know, whatever. But that's nature of society, you know.
That was my perception, too. And you lived there for a number of months?
Probably a year and a half, 2 years.
And I know that, we've been trying to get a similar campground open, and it's become a hotter issue recently because of Camp Paradise's de facto declaration of a campground, which really has gotten a lot of community support. And the city council, the way I think would like to rush them out of there post-haste, is having trouble doing it because the neighborhood, at least some folks in the neighborhood, a number of them at least, have said that they like them there. They think that they're a positive influence. That the camp is largely a drug-free camp. It's a place where people can go. They can kind of protect each other. All the reasons why people get together, you know, for campgrounds. Any positive or negative views of Camp Paradise?
I can appreciate the activity at Camp Paradise. I think it's kind of like a cross-section of what needs to be happening throughout. You know, not only Camp Paradise, not only the Santa Cruz homeless situation, but the business people, the community activists, arts and craft people. It's just a kind of show of support in the pioneerism of them, of trying to reach out and be productive and support themselves.
Now, the current Santa Cruz camping law, 6.36, does allow folks in vehicles to park two parking lots on a business parking lot or three on a church parking lot with the written permission of the owner. Have you ever used that exception to the camping ban or sleeping ban or both?
I've done two of them. I've done one at the Star of the Sea on Frederick Street, which is now disbanded, and I also was involved in one at the Holy Cross Catholic Church up here on High Street, which is now disbanded.
And I think I remember certainly the Holy Cross one. That was in the summer of 96. There actually was a pavilion there. Mm-hmm. But there, it is still the law, presumably. I mean, it is the law that churches and businesses that want to have folks parking on their property cannot be cited under the camping ban if they give written permission, provided they have no more than 2 for a business and 3 for a church. Have you heard of that provision being used very widely?
I haven't mentioned it. I haven't heard mention of it. I wasn't fully aware of that, full details of it even myself, even though I have done, like I said, church camping before.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it being used extensively. I know that the largest churches in the area, according to, I guess it's a long letter, is it in the Metro or in this week's Good Times? I'm not sure, but there was quite a sharp letter which denounced 2 large churches for having nothing to do with the ISSP, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is what, it's an additional program. It's kind of been the emergency shelter program, which shelters 39 people per night in the summer months and the fall and the spring, and then 160 or so, 158 last year when they opened the Armory and another church, and on kind of a revolving basis. You have to show up 4 o'clock, stand in line, get to go to a church if there's room, and frequently there isn't. In fact, throughout the summer and throughout the non-winter program, there almost always is no room, and that, of course, is one of the defenses that Camp Paradise is going to use when it goes to court to fight its tickets on November 19th, assuming that all happens, though there has been a discussion around that of a deal, which I'll mention. I talked to attorney Paul Sanford, and there was a story on this in the San Jose Mercury News recently, that the city attorney, assistant city attorney, spoke to Paul Sanford and offered them all a deal, particularly Larry Templeton, who has numerous tickets, that if he would agree to do, I guess, 8 hours of community service, I'm not sure total or per ticket, that they would, the city attorney would dismiss the tickets before they got to court, and that this was independent of the other 9 people who are also being charged with camping for this August 3rd ticketing blitz, which the police did on Camp Paradise and other people in the area. I know you yourself got a camping ticket, what, about a month and a half ago?
About a month and a half ago, yeah.
And was this, when you got the, but let me finish up this story first before we get to your ticket, which I think is important. Mm-hmm. Camp Paradise tickets, of course, were for folks not in vehicles. They were for folks who were camping, actually in tents. And so that's not the sleeping ban, that's the camping ban, which actually is a 24-hour ban on anyone who uses camping equipment and intends to stay overnight in a location where she or he is set up. Sleeping ban, on the other hand, is an even worse law, but it only refers to the nighttime activities from 11 to 8:30 a.m. in the morning. If you are sleeping in a vehicle, outside a vehicle, in any structure that's not a domicile, to wit, a house or hotel, with and even the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, as far as I know, has no permits. So theoretically, you're illegal if you're in the ISSP program, and that church happens to be in Santa Cruz, although I'm not sure too many of them are, but I think there are a few that the ISSP uses. By the way, if you want to interrupt me at any point, feel free to either, you know, kick me or, you know, let me know. This Camp Paradise, I encourage people to come to. There's actually a pretrial, I believe, on November 1st for those who are interested, and I'll be mentioning that. But at this discussion, the city attorney's assistant came forward, according to Paul Sanford, attorney for the Camp Paradise folks, and said that she would dismiss all the tickets, you know, on an individual basis with no strings attached, or certainly at least dismiss Larry's tickets if he would do the community service. He agreed to do the community service, but then apparently Barrasone, and what Sanford called a gross breach of protocol, changed his mind and said, no, they all have to agree to do it or none of them can get it. And so there was sort of a brouhaha in the paper about that. I personally would love to see a trial on this whole issue of all 10 folks using the necessity defense, which is the defense that says, yeah, we did break this law, but we did it to avert, as a matter of necessity, a greater evil, which is, you want to say something about that?
I would think the city of Santa Cruz would appreciate people looking out for themselves in a way to shelter themselves. Actually, once you begin to really notice the people that are actually taking care of themselves, you find out that they're working people. They're very politically minded, very human rights active. So, you know, it's like it's kind of in a this democratic society we have going on here. I mean, it's kind of unjust to reprimand someone for being able to support themselves in whatever means necessary. I mean, Club Paradise, for example, according to the ISP, there's no homeless shelter. What are we to do? Now, I'm involved in a Home on Wheels program, a new group showing up, and we're kind of in the same predicament as the Camp Paradise. Here we are, hopefully supporting ourselves, not living on the street, not involved in the hoorah of Santa Cruz County for its drugs and alcohol and crime and all this other stuff, and we're being told that this is not appropriate. If you really notice that if you are a, say for example, tourist coming into Santa Cruz with your motorhome, you can live in your motorhome endlessly and not be bothered any whatsoever. But as a tax-paying working person in Santa Cruz, not being able to deal with the economic venture, the homeless crisis, the lack of support for his homeless places to sleep for his ISP program, we are really in a dogfight here for our own survival. And I would urge anyone that's concerned or have some interest, we have meetings out at the Friendship Garden out at the Harvey West Park twice a week. Those meetings were at 6:30, 7 o'clock on Monday night and on Friday night. Also, there's a meeting at Baker Square with the Huff program, Robert Norris, that anyone that's, you know, has some interest or concerns or like to show some support or just become more knowledgeable of what the homeless situation crisis is in Santa Cruz, I welcome you to be at those meetings.
Yeah, I would invite you. I was actually at one of your HOW meetings, I guess the second big HOW meeting. There were 10, 15, 20 people there, many of whom live in their vehicles, many of whom, there were some kids there. We're talking about some folks from the woods, some folks from vehicles, folks who really feel that their options are being cut off. I talked to one man, a grizzled camper who's been around here. Well, you've been around for 3 decades. He has been around for at least 2 decades. I don't want to say his name on the air without getting his permission, but he said he camps out. He hides in the Poganib. He has a very well hidden campsite. Police tracked to his campsite and gave him and his significant other camping tickets.
What I would like to have happen is
and that was recently.
Yeah, you know, if you notice in Santa Cruz County, the economic venture and the housing shortage, one bedroom studio is $700-$800 a month. Economic situation in Santa Cruz, the jobs are $10 to $12, $15 an hour, and you're lucky if you have one of those. And if you really check it out, you find out that most of us that are working are only 1 or 2 paychecks from being homeless. And recently they did a survey and they found only to be 1,235 homeless people in Santa Cruz. And I'd be more than venture to bet that number is way, 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 you know, unrealistic. And we're talking about people that are sleeping on the neighbor's couch or maybe, you know, get, for whatever reason, a child gets sick and they can't afford the rent, they need to pay the medical bills, you are now considered to be actually homeless. So this is a plight that's really kind of prevalent, and I think it's going to continue to grow. And this idea of being able to sleep in a vehicle or make yourself comfortable in whatever means necessary is something that we have to really deal with as a reality.
Yeah, in fact, I recently wrote an article about this, about Santa Barbara, which is apparently adopting the perspective of Eugene, Oregon, which has actually set up a program, not an adequate program, but certainly a beginning program, yeah, start, where they have 16 spaces for 3 vehicles each, including a washing facility and a toilet facility, and it's stage managed or handled by a private charity. So if there's a problem, if there's complaints about those folks parked in those places, then they get a person from St. Vincent de Paul's, I think it is, or maybe it's the Salvation Army, one of the two, not a police officer, goes in and talks to them and tries to mediate and encourages them to, you know, either move for a time or tries to find out exactly what the problem is. And this is the kind of thing that, you know, we saw solve the problems at the farmer's market, I think, last Wednesday with the departure of the previously rather, I'd say, repression-minded former market manager, who I think was adopting the wrong approach. And the board has moved to take a more, I regard it as a traditional Santa Cruz stance, not, unfortunately, the traditional Santa Cruz City Council stance, or the traditional Santa Cruz Police Department stance, or the Santa Cruz business stance. But among other groups of people, I think there is a willingness to mediate and a willingness to engage in conflict resolution and sharing. And, you know, it's ironic that someone like Scott Kennedy, who's part of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, is often the council member who's recommending kind of local military solutions here in Santa Cruz, while abroad, of course, he's for peace and stopping the bombing of Afghanistan, which I support him on thoroughly. It's kind of a strange thing where you get this, let's be concerned about the homeless in Nicaragua, the homeless in Colombia, all, you know, the homeless anywhere but in Santa Cruz. Here in Santa Cruz, we have to give $7 million additional dollars for a cost overrun for a $5 million police station, making a total of $12 million. We can't give any money. Significant funding for a campground. Camp Paradise is being told to arrange everything itself or get out of town. And, of course, the attempt last summer, I should say summer before last, in the summer of 2000, when the safe sleeping zones were proposed, they were essentially, they were done to death by the betrayal of Catherine Byers, who was a council member who cut and ran after San Francisco Chronicle did a nasty story, and Mike Rodkin made some false charges, and I guess Mike Vasquez of the Downtown Business Association started smearing the whole thing. And instead of the three people who did essentially vote for the safe sleeping zones, Crone, Fitz, Morris, and Sugar, city council members, picking up their fourth and fifth votes, which they have, Riley and Porter, they would not even allow the matter to be discussed for the last year. So we have a situation where it's a complete blackout. Although, of course, what happens is, in this situation, problems continue to develop. Instead of putting in more restrooms, the Public Works Department under Matt Farrell, without any public discussion or public hearing, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, took out two of the five porta potties that were mandated to be put in downtown, one near the Catalyst and one near San Lorenzo Lumberyard, supposedly because of complaints. I don't know what they were, prostitution, drug use. Those are always nice things to start screaming about around election time, or if you have a problem, you can always talk about. And those are realities in our society. The other reality is you have to take a dump. You have to find somewhere to take a piss. And if there's no place to do it, then you do it where you have to do it. So it's really kind of, and then, of course, you want to blame the homeless for doing it once you've taken out the porta potties. I mean, it's ridiculous. And also, the same group, this task force on bathrooms established by Christopher Crone in February 1999, but in the same essential time period when Catherine Byers sabotaged the task force to examine the camping ordinance, which was an earlier sabotage of Byers, they said that there should be restrooms and porta potties put in areas that were well camped in terms of industrial zones. That was never done. When I asked Matt Farrell why that wasn't done, he said, "Oh, we're too busy working on something else, and the group hasn't met in a year and a half." And Emily Riley, who's on that body and should know better, has done absolutely nothing about that. In fact, we're going to hear that Emily Riley is the person who set up this latest repressive law, moved at city council, I guess it was in September 25th, that there be these no parking from 5 to 7 signs, 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. signs on the streets where currently there are a lot of vehicles, folks who are struggling. The head of Homes on Wheels, I hear, Ed Menzies, I guess his name is, I hope I'm pronouncing it properly, Ed, he was going to be here at the studio, but somehow he hasn't quite made it. We're hoping we can get him down here. He will be at the meeting on Monday night, however, at the Harvey West Friendship Garden, I guess it's called, at the end of Harvey West Park, way there in the far corner. At, I guess the meeting is at 7 o'clock, and 7. Come a little earlier if you want to bring some barbecue and such, a sort of a friendly
socialized
position there.
Get
so
to meet people.
Yeah. Did you want to say something?
I want to speak about this 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. It seems like to me this is, as being a homeless person living in a particular area where these particular signs are going up, and I have not recalled or noticed these signs going anywhere else other than the industrial area around the Harvey West Park. A few years ago, the homeless service center was put in this area. And I'm kind of somewhat shocked that here at this late day, we are being asked not to be involved in that community, living in our vehicles or being able to park from 5 to 7. This allows people to not have to have travel long distance to get services. Everything's appropriate. Harvey West Park is there for showers and toilet use, dumpster use, it's just, we're basically being asked to leave a lot of convenience that are put in an industrial area around the community involving the homeless service center. And we really need to look at that, you know. This is just another attack on the homeless situation. Just, you know, the Downtown Business Association That's why we put in porta potties, to kind of alleviate some of this problem, be a little bit more cordially inviting, be a little bit more, show a bit more friendship toward others. And now all of a sudden it's kind of being turned around again. This could be your community, this could be your home, this could be your vehicle. So, you know, you may not be feeling the pressure of it now, but any time this could come up.
Okay. We have a caller who actually called in, which is great. Since last show there were absolutely zero callers, and I was wondering if everybody had moved to Afghanistan or moved out of the country or who knows what. Let's see if we can get this caller on the line. Hey there, caller.
Robert North.
Hey, this sounds like that sometime rent control activist, Bob LaMonica.
Hi, Robert. Mm-hmm. I had a question for you and your guest.
Yeah,
uh-huh. In general terms, I'm not saying this is an absolute across the board, but why is it that poor people revere greed and wealth and opulence?
Well, let me ask you, David, as a poor person, do you revere greed, wealth, and opulence?
I can understand your position, and that's not what we're all about, and that's not what I'm contending at all. All I'm asking to be is to be able to survive and exist. I'm not saying I want to be wealthy, I don't want to be wealthy, and I'm not against wealth. But I have a certain amount of wealth in my motorhome, or in being able to park on the street, being able to walk as a human being and have rights as any other homeowner, for example, or any other registered voter, tax-paying citizen of Santa Cruz County. And I think that's basically what is being asked.
What do you think, Bob?
It's not answering my question at all.
Well, generally
speaking,
yeah.
Now, I mean, when I look at popular culture and the consequences of popular culture, poor people, and I'm using that as a relative term, tend to revere and tend to think highly of and wish for their children to be and wish for themselves to be greedy, wealthy, and live opulently. I don't think our entertainment would be oriented the way that it is were it not for that fact.
I think we need to define wealth, greed, poor people, and all this other.
Wealth is a palace. Wealth is a castle. Wealth is quite easy to define. Wealth is poor Hispanic people watching upper middle class soap operas on TV. Why is that? Why does it all? It seems to always be this way. It's not like an American thing.
David? Bob,
if you kind of notice, quote, the poor culture, quote, the Hispanic, using the term you used, there is a sense of wealth there. I mean, it may not be in a sense of materialistic a palace or a new car or money and all that, but there's a socialization that goes on that brings people together to create family, to create bonds, and this is what the real wealth in America really needs to be all about. I mean, even the dollar bill says "In God We Trust." We need to kind of apply that a little bit more.
Well, once again, I keep saying that maybe I'm not making the point clear enough. To me, it's a very important issue. There's an issue regarding our values, and those that are economically poor, as a general rule, tend to value and respect those that are wealthy, and in fact, that are opulently wealthy, that are excessively wealthy. One last thing.
Yeah.
As a key point, history. We don't look at history from the standpoint of social consequences economically.
Right. Right.
We look at the Taj Mahal, we look at Versailles,
right,
and we see beautiful buildings. We don't see the social consequences to accomplish those buildings.
Exactly.
Well, I think that's true, but again, I don't know if I agree with you that poor people more than, let's say, upper middle class people or wealthy people venerate wealth. And I think that one of the reasons that you may get that impression is because the folks that control the culture, the folks that control the television set and fund all this stuff, are not the poor people.
I don't disagree with you, Robert, that it's not, it's
and
not
so
just the poor.
But what I'm saying is, if it's all you've got to watch is the programs that they give you.
That's not true, Mr. North.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way, it's a great majority of what you've got.
If people wanted bicycle races, there'd be bicycle races on CBS.
Well, it depends. It depends on whether they have the money to pay for it.
People want Regis Philbin and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That's what people want to watch.
Well,
when you say people, are you speaking
by choice?
Are you saying people as a whole, or people as a percentage?
I'm saying as a general observation, in my most humble opinion.
Well, I think that the reason a lot of this happens has to do with the fact that people are isolated from each other, that we're in a society that doesn't really allow for the actualization for a lot of us of these real ideals of
community, these real ideals of kind of the intangible wealth of the contacts we have with each other. Instead, you know, you sit at home with your television, drinking in whatever it gives you, and trying to find some way to steel yourself to go out for the two jobs you need to pay the damn rent. And speaking of which, I understand you had an interesting discussion down in Monterey on the issue of rent control, Bob.
A couple of weeks ago.
Right.
There was a panel.
Yeah. How'd that go?
Uh-huh. It's always interesting to do these things. And, of course, they had maybe, I think there might have been an audience of 50 or 60 people there. I think a kind of a strong showing. The issue is a difficult issue because it tends to go right up against money and power, politicians on a local basis, the ones that get elected, generally speaking, because they're backed by property owners. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but it tends to sidestep where they might take a position on that particular issue.
David has a question for you on that.
Yeah.
Is that a greed issue, Bob?
What is a greed issue?
The particular stand that the politicians and homeowners and the business area people take on.
What's your guest name?
David.
David.
David. In my opinion, David, it's a power over principle issue.
Isn't a secondary outcome is greed? The business people, the homeowners, wind up basically oppressing and mandating.
Profiteering off of. Yeah, I mean, but whatever it is.
And there's another aspect to this, too. Why, in terms of rent control, which in a situation like the Central Coast, should have been, and there were several times when this issue has kind of surfaced, many times 20 years ago, and one time in the late 90s here in Santa Cruz, and it kind of percolating up on the Monterey Peninsula, but they're up against the same kind of a situation. The politicians are extremely reticent to take it on, and the reason why, in my opinion, is that most of them are backed by property interests. That's who got them in office. Same thing here in Santa Cruz. So what they want is they want to give them to them on a platter, and without their support, it's not going to happen. Not going to happen unless there's some kind of a people power bandwagon, and that's not going to happen.
My impression is government was based on for the people, by the people, and all the people, and I kind of... That seems like that's kind of got misplaced. And an example of some 30 years ago, HUB put a program up to give Section 8 low-income housing as general assistance to property owners that were willing to give low-income, economically deprived people low-income rent. That lease is now over 30 years later, and these low-income, unfeasibly economic people are having to deal with market value.
Yeah, I hear you, David.
Government for, by, and of is pretty on paper. When you put it in practice, and to me this is a clear principle to me, and it's something that I have seen, and I will be happily stand corrected. But poor people tend to vote for the wealthy people. They tend to revere wealthy people, and when they get a little piece of the action, when they become a property owner, they tend to think that, well, maybe I can exploit somebody too.
Well, it depends. It depends. I mean, you had massive unions in the 30s that rose up and banded together with each other.
When they were so poor that they were willing to band together.
Well,
when they get one rung up on that ladder, Robert.
Well, it depends.
Then you cut the rung off.
I mean, I think that's always a danger. But let me ask you about Monterey. And David, I don't want to jump in here, but I want to find out about Monterey.
I will support, I was invited to speak. I think the issue is a fascinating issue. It is local application of values. It is interesting that some of us get so emotional and irrational about rent control when we don't get so emotional and irrational about public utilities control, right? We're not willing to look at it in the objective and realize that all rent control is that it regulates the degree that your rent can increase. That's all it is.
Right. What happened in Monterey, Bob?
It's not some commie takeover.
What happened in Monterey?
In Monterey, there was a gathering of people. There was a panel discussion. I was there. Randy Silverman from
Berkeley.
Berkeley was there, and some local folks from the Monterey Peninsula discussing housing options from a grassroots basis, and rent control became the focus of the evening.
And what
really.
was it likely to? I mean, is there another meeting planned?
In my opinion, the times are not with this. I wish them the best. I would support. I'll support anything that is along this way for tenants' rights, for those that do not have a vested interest, rights for those without vested interests. Mm-hmm. My sense is they have a very, very difficult uphill battle, and it's difficult to organize tenants. It's difficult to fund tenants' rights.
But I know your opinions, Bob, because you've often said them, and they're important.
Well,
but I want to
know them. I want to get them out. Robert.
Right. Well,
you want to know what I think.
I'm trying to get a report from you on what happened.
What happened is that there was a little bit of press generated. There was some momentum generated, and we'll see what happens. There are some emails being circulated. And beyond that,
how can people get involved? You know, I mean, is there any way to?
There is helpforrenters.org, which they can check out on the
helpforrenters.org.
Yeah, that's a group based out of on the peninsula. K-Star, I think, is their name.
Mm-hmm.
They can start from there if they want to get involved. There's also over the hill in San Jose. There's activity that's been percolating for a while, and people talk that there may be a just cause eviction ordinance that might surface over the hill.
I heard something about that.
It might just kind of happen without a lot of wind.
Well, I know that you yourself were circulating a rent control petition a couple of years ago. In fact, in a sort of a strange juxtapose, you had a table set up at the farmer's market when you were, I guess, approached by Officer Howes, who asked you to take down the table. And now, of course, they've barred all tables in that area. It's now been meshed off.
Well, I got to tell you something, Robert. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, I agree with you on some issues, and I think that your tenacity is a positive thing.
Uh-huh.
But I think we can distinguish noise and nuisance making from political freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to believe that there was a point when the drummers were simply out of hand.
Well, I'm talking about the political tablers. I mean, would you like to see that area return to the use of the folks who've previously been able to use it?
I think that when you're talking low-funded political issues like rent control in 1999, there were very few other options available.
Right.
Which is why I stood up.
Right, and there were other tables who were pressing other causes. But now, if you look along the Cedar Street sidewalk on Wednesday between 2:30 and 6:30, even under the new management, there are still no tables allowed in that meshed-off area.
Well, I think that that's not correct. I think that, once again, we can distinguish between noise-making nuisance and political freedom of speech. And the groups that tend to be represented along that way on Cedar Street are generally the underfunded groups that need to get their voices out somewhere, and that's one of the few places where you can get your voice
those
out.
Those poor folks who worship wealth that you've been talking about.
No, you're putting words into
I'm
my
just
mouth.
Kidding.
That
just
aren't
kidding,
there.
Bob. Just ribbing you.
Like
just
I say, I would distinguish between, and I want to make that clear.
Right.
I do not agree that the drummers have a right to.
No, I'm talking about the political tablers.
Drone out. They do have a right to be there, and I stood up, Robert, if you want to remember that.
Well, I've
Robert,
never thought of you as a worshiper of wealth, although
okay.
You look, I mean, you know, you. I've seen you, that was one thing I wouldn't call you, is a mammon lover. You know.
I don't think it's not bad to be successful.
Nor would I call you rich, for that matter. I think you're a relatively poor person.
It's not bad to be successful. It's not wrong to have your act together.
Mm-hmm.
And people deserve to be compensated. But there's a point where it becomes crude and ruthless and opulence. Why it is that the average person will look at the Taj Mahal or Versailles or the Brandenburg Palace, and they don't see something that's just gross is beyond me. And until we get to that point, we're really not going to change too much socially. Long as the average person is willing to be diverted by Regis Philbin in Las Vegas and Disneyland, then socially we're going to have what we have. Is we're heading down towards a two-tiered economy where that middle ground that was the redistribution of wealth that was brought about by the Great Society is being dismantled.
Hey, Bob, I appreciate your calling. Is there a number folks can call if they are interested in rent control locally?
If anything ever were to surface locally, I would be happy to get involved and add my perspective to and maybe some energy towards. They can call me if they want, 466-0500.
466-0500. We're talking to Bob LaMonica, and Dave's got a couple comments for you off air, so tune into your radio, and he's going to talk a little bit. You got a radio, right? You're listening on the radio?
What's he want now?
He just wants you to tune to your radio because he's got a few more.
Oh, he wants to talk to me where I can't respond to him?
Well, I want to cut you off because I want to get going. But go ahead, Dave. Say your comments. We'll give you one last shot back and forth here.
Bob, I really appreciate your comments, your suggestions. And there's an upstart program going on Home on Wheels in Santa Cruz that need the kind of expertise and support that I feel like you're willing to give. Our meetings are at the Harvey West Friendship Park, and they usually start around 7, 6:30. We come together and chat a little bit, get fresh up on what happened, and I welcome you to come by.
That's on Mondays and Fridays. Did you want to say something in response?
I'm grateful for the invitation, and best of luck, and I'll tune into the rest of the show.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you, Robert.
All right.
Yes.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're on the air if you call in to 427-3772. That's our call-in line, 427-3772, with David. What's your last name, David? David Allen. That's a different David Allen than the KSCO David.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and that's not to be mistaken for the other David Allen. We're going to be talking about a number of subjects. Again, the new organization, How, Homeless on Wheels, and we have another call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. I just had a couple comments. I was listening to the last caller, and this idea of power over principle in and of itself, I think, is greed. It's a pretty good definition for greed, actually, and that's the problem. Greed is something, it's hard to define, yes, but it's like, it's an ideal that people have that money is more important than human life and nature and, like, you know, the environment. So, I don't know. I was just listening. I hear Bob call in a lot, and I don't know. I get frustrated sometimes because he kind of monopolizes the radio for a while, and I feel like, I don't know.
It's your turn.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not. I just wanted to say that, actually. That was pretty much all I wanted to say. That was in and of itself, like, a definition of greed. And
well, do you agree with Bob's thought that
I don't agree that people who are, you know, of paupers, for lack of a better term, or people who are poor, lower income. I myself consider myself to be pretty fucking poor. I work a part-time job and I barely am able to make my rent. I'm just now paying my rent. It's the middle of the month and it should have been paid like on the 5th. Mm-hmm. And I have no need to want to watch, what was it, Regis Philbin or something?
I have no idea. I'm not a TV man.
I have no urge to watch that on CBS. And I think that largely that idea is a media construct in and of itself. Like the idea that Bob was portraying that poor people, lower income people, like emulate wealth and want to be wealthy. I don't think that, yeah, that might be true in some individual cases, but I don't think as a blanket statement that's really the situation. And, you know, a lot of times these things are talked about in columns in the newspaper and it's like bandied about, but for the most part, I think given a choice, most people on this planet, the majority of the people being poor, would, given the choice, would choose to just have, you know, what they need to survive and share the resources of this planet and the wealth of this planet equally amongst everybody, as opposed to gobbling up as much as they can, like the few people at the top. Yeah, maybe a handful of people out there. I don't know. It's just my opinion, I think. Well, I think generally, for the most part, people are good, and it's things like, you know, ideals like greed that corrupt people. And
or just the practices. If you have a system that glorifies this kind of stuff, and you do, you know, people are socialized into believing this kind of stuff.
I mean, yeah, maybe people in America think, maybe poor people in America may tend to want to emulate wealth more than poor people in, say, Indonesia, or poor people, say, you know, anywhere in Africa or whatever. A lot of people, you know, in so-called third world countries that are considered backward actually probably have no idea about half the technologies that are going on. You know, they so-called civilization, a civilized world, and, I mean, I don't know, whatever. I'm just babbling at this point. I just wanted to just call in and talk.
David has a question, comment for you.
That's fine. I think we're all conversing here, and this is all good. And I think the more and more of this takes place, we kind of find out that the power really lies in the principle. Somehow it's gotten divided, and it's a power without principle. And I think that's the downfall. Even, you know, the World Trade Center is a perfect example of it. You know, I mean, when we get to the point where we use so much power that we think we own and own and own and own, and not allow others to share and have and hold, these are the kind of things that come about.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real revolution going on in America particularly nowadays, particularly in Santa Cruz.
a revolution of thought.
Self-thought, where people are actually beginning and loving the idea of knowing and sharing and actually knowing someone, you know, other than themselves. You know, how many people know their neighbor next door, for example?
Good question.
How many people are willing to, you know, a cup of sugar, you know, whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And how many people are going to show up at Homes on Wheels
on Monday at 7 o'clock
at Friendship Park at Harvey West and on Fridays at the same time to help folks get some rights who live in their vehicle?
And these are the kind of things that are going on amongst homeless people, the sharing, the knowing, the willing to allow, and all these kind of things.
All right, well, I think thanks for the time.
Hey, Vina, and your show, can you discuss some of these issues, is on?
I'm coming up at 2 p.m. today with the Weekly Freak Show, and we're going to be talking a lot about what's going on in Afghanistan and the response locally.
Ouch.
To the war.
I think we should drop the city council over to Afghanistan. No, just kidding. That might be construed as a terrorist threat.
Yeah, careful what you say. These are no times to have free rides.
No time for joking, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hey, thanks, Vinny.
And it's Free Radio Santa Cruz. Lines are open at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 96.3 FM. My guest in the studio, David Allen. The subject for discussion... Vice Mayor Christopher Crone happened to be over in Loudoun Nelson Park, Laurel Park, I guess it's also called, and he was with his daughter, and some folks from the MIA group were meeting, and I think that there's going to be a resolution that's going to be put together that may be introduced in the next council meeting supporting another trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal. But another issue that was raised by some activists, I was one of them, with Vice Mayor Crone, not with much hope, I might add, at least on my part, was the issue of rent control and whether we could get actually a resolution from that former activist who at one time was concerned with Pelton Street, the homeless garden, rights for Hispanics in the beach area and the beach flats, all those things pretty much abandoned as far as I can see, or at least not very vigorously pursued as Christopher Crone has been on the city council. And if somebody wants to call to defend Crone, I would love to hear it. I've never heard anybody defend him on this station in any effective way. I guess Fred Geiger tried at one point. Anyway, Crone said that he would love to have a resolution around the rent control situation, and he would consider it. Of course, he always says these kinds of things, and he shows up at rallies and talks about rent control, but then runs around and says, oh, but if we talk about rent control too much, we'll get all those landlords to raise their rents, so we got to watch out. Well, I called, as I think I mentioned, Randy Silverman of the Berkeley Rent Control Board, formerly a two-time chair, I believe, of the Rent Control Board. He's a very articulate and I think knowledgeable person on the issue. That's my impression. And he points out that Berkeley and other cities have passed rent control, that landlords did try to raise their rents and in consequence of that discussion. That's going to happen, but you can roll them back retroactively. That can be a part of the rent control legislation. So when Mayor Fitzmaurice tells you that he can't talk about rent control because that'll just antagonize the landlords and make them raise their rents, you can tell him what you need to do is talk about it in a clear way and then roll back the rents. As a part of the eventual rent control that's obtained. And I think that is what needs to be done. But, of course, we don't have that kind of courage and that kind of clarity on city council at the moment, nor have we ever had, for that matter. So it's not going to happen until there's a movement from the people, the same 800 to 1,200 students that marched down to oppose the Afghani bombing have got to march down to City Hall and demand rent control. They've got to march to the Chancellor's office and demand that the university stop ripping off low-income housing all over the city and making people who are working people at the Holiday Inn jobless, as they did 2 months ago, 80 people discharged from their jobs there. Thank you. Was it Martha Greenberg? Is that her name? The chancellor of UCSC here. Anyway, that until that people power begins to really get together, as you are getting together, David, to do this Homes on Wheels, you're not going to see anything happen, and I'm afraid that's exactly what we need, people getting together to actually do something. You're tuned to Free Radio again, and you can join this discussion. You can be one of those people that gets together, 427-3772. We're talking to Dave Allen of Homes on Wheels, a new group of vehicular residents that meets twice a week, Mondays and Fridays at 7 o'clock at the Peace Garden at the Harvey West Park. It's kind of at the end of Harvey West Park. I think it's Harvey West and Sylvania. That's the actual street. Now, what I'm going to do is kind of give some of the background of the current brouhaha and these signs. You've heard them mention that they're now 5 to 7 a.m. no parking signs are going up along Harvey West Avenue and other avenues there, possibly at the instigation of Costco, certainly at the instigation of the man you're about to hear, Don Hubbard of the Harvey West, the Residential or Business Association, who spoke, and you're going to hear this now, at City Council during the oral communications period on July 24th. He gave this speech, and City Council gave their responses, and then without any public hearing, without any meaningful discussion or debate, with any alternatives, Emily Riley, at the next council session, moved to pass this. Actually, it was at the September 25th council session, after the August recess, moved to pass signage in Harvey West that, as David has pointed out, there is no other similar signage in the city. No street is cleaned every day, as this street, they say, has to be done. No street has those bizarre hours of 5 to 7. They made this excuse that, well, we're near the yard, so the cleaning vehicles near the cleaning yard can kind of come out, see if it needs cleaning, and move on, and it'll be ready for cleaning from 5 to 7. They wouldn't pull this kind of shit, if you'll excuse me for putting it this way, in a residential neighborhood where people would have to get up at 5 and move their vehicles. But rather, they want to make it even worse for people who live in their vehicles, and who would have to wake up their children to move, who would have to wake up, and in some cases, of course, their vehicles are disabled. It's extremely difficult to move. And this, of course, creates also difficulties for people that are in the area where they would be moving to. But did you want to say something on this, David?
The city council did this without any sort of, I would say, collateral cooperation from the very people this is affecting. Even in residential areas, they give you like 2 or 3 days notice for a street sweeper to come on, please have your car parked off the curb at such and such a time, such and such a date. Now, we're actually living where we are parked, and we are being asked to move our homes, move our whole existence, if you want to call it that, and not be allowed back. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, there's no other place in the city that has a 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. no parking zone.
We don't want your kind around here. What part of that don't you understand?
All of it. I mean, I am your kind, human.
Oh, you naive fellow, you. You're tuned to Free Radio, and we are your kind here, 427-3772. But you're going to hear now a little bit from the July 24th council session, the plea, apparently, the public statement that prompted this 5 to 7 get moving signage that's now going up in Harvey West, and perhaps has prompted the formation of Homes on Wheels, which is actually a kind of an expansion. Santa Barbara has an organization called Homes on Wheels.
And Eugene
is, I don't know if they have a Homes on Wheels there, but they have some organizational.
Very successful.
They have a program, that's for sure. And I know that it may be that the city council's repression is going to be prompting some real response. And I would hope so. Let's see what we got here on tape. So listen in.
Don Hubbard. Have a nice vacation. Last time I don't get a chance to yell at you. But I'm not here to yell at you. I'm here to ask for your help.
Hubbard talking with Harvey West.
We in the Harvey West area have a never-ending kind of problem that seems to have exacerbated itself with the time of the year, and that is overnight parking and camping that's going on out there. I went down to Sylvania the other day, and there was 13 campers and buses parked out there. I've been yelling my head off at Mr. Belcher, but there's not a heck of a lot he can do, because we, meaning I and the Harvey West Area Association, have done very little to codify what it is we need. Now, there doesn't seem to be a bigger hot button in this whole town than permit parking, constrained parking at any level, because it seems like every time I come here, I listen to somebody say, you can't do this, you can't do this. I would like a simple directive folks to Ron Marquez or one of his folks to sit down and work out with us a good reasoned approach to what we can do to solve our problems out there. The refuse, the drug paraphernalia, they're starting to use at Harvey West Park, the baseball diamond itself as a bathroom. We've got to do something, folks. I need your help. So could I get, or could could I ask for somehow or another directive, Ron or one of his folks to sit down with me, and we can do a reasoned approach. We can bring back to you after your recess, say, we've considered this thing, and this seems to make the most sense, and if we have to go street by street by street, we'll do that. But let's work out something that makes some sense, okay?
I'll let you finish your comments, Mr. Hubbard, and I'll listen to the council.
All right.
Are you finished? Mr. Sugar.
Go on. There was a while there where various departments under the aegis of Officer Howes was meeting with the association to address these various problems, and those meetings have since abated? Or?
No, Officer Howes has been pretty busy with the stuff that he's doing now. Actually, if we were going to deal with anybody, it would be Eric Seeley, who gets the homeless resource officer, but then he also gets stuck with B&B commander. So I think we all know the workload that's in the police department right now, and it's pretty tough to get somebody out there. You know, only if somebody's face down on the street.
There were these interdisciplinary meetings that were occurring.
Yes, sir.
And those haven't happened.
This is not on our agenda. I'd like to give direction or general kind of direction, if that's...
And what I'd like to do is I'd like to convene those meetings again, so I'll touch base with the city manager and the other department heads, and we'll do that again.
Love to.
Thank you.
Now, Council Member Sugar, former Mayor Sugar, is calling for a reconvening of interdisciplinary meetings with the staff and the business folks. This is the kind of closed-door meetings he had when he proposed the safe sleeping zones, which didn't involve the public, which didn't involve homeless advocates such as myself and Becky Johnson, and ended up only involving David Silva. And he was eventually swamped by the police department when they came up with one restriction after another, one complaint after another about the safe sleeping zones a year and a half ago. So Sugar, again, is calling for the same kind of closed-door meetings that he wanted to have with respect to the Citizens Police Review Board, when that issue was being discussed by a subcommittee of the Citizens Police Review Board and the City Council. He wanted to have those meetings closed to the public. This is the liberal Council Member Sugar, who we thought was going to be a strong voice for basic human rights. Instead, we see this closed-door process, this insidious process of sort of getting your information from the staff, having these conferences with business leaders, and coming up with a proposal that does not involve input, for example, from you, David, and from those who are actually directly impacted by this in terms of their survival skills, not just whether there's some trash on their street, thank you very much, which could be dealt with, by perhaps following the mandate that City Council had given out 2 years ago to the city managers, dumpsters and porta potties. That is the one that's being ignored. But we don't see, though, the staff being held to account or the council standing up and saying, do what we told you to do. Instead, homeless people are going to be run off. That's what's happening here. And if I sound a little passionate about it, well, it's because it seems to me pretty outrageous. What's your thought, David?
I totally agree. This is phenomenal that the city council would treat other taxpaying, working Santa Cruz residents, registered voters in Santa Cruz in this nature, without even a word. I mean, all of a sudden, it's just so you can kind of get the drift of why some people are really get kind of animated and get a little bit non-objective when they're discussing what goes on in Santa Cruz if they are living under the whip of this kind of environment.
You know, perhaps homeless people should go and talk directly to Emily Riley, who runs a bakery up on Laurel and Mission Streets. Emily's Bakery, it's called. And it's really hard. She doesn't seem to return her phone calls, at least for me, when I call her at City Council. So maybe if homeless folks lined up in the morning at her bakery, they could get a hearing from her as to what, in fact, she meant by introducing a resolution that is true for no other area of the city that criminalizes people in their vehicles from 5 to 7, or even people outside their vehicles. You can't have your vehicle there from 5 to 7. Mm-hmm. And does she somehow need that the homeless are especially dirty people that need to have the area especially well cleaned? And she claims this is a compromise. What do you think, David?
Bring your dollar to him, please, if you want to have discussion. Bring your dollars.
I guess you're suggesting that there be this meeting that homeless on wheels might come up with such a proposal. I think that homeless on wheels should do a park-in at Emily Riley's place. I mean, I don't know what to say. Riley, if she doesn't respond to meaningful conversations with people, there has to be some direct way for the public to let her know that this kind of criminalization of homeless people is not something that she was elected to do. So, you know, and I'm not proposing anybody be illegal or nasty or violent. I'm suggesting people just make their opinions clear and talk to her. She is, after all, a public servant. She has, in fact, decided to run for this $1,000 or is it $2,000 a year job as city council person.
But it isn't so much replying to decisions, replying to a telephone call or an answer. So, like, to me, she would welcome the idea of people that directly being affected by these kinds of activity to have some kind of say-so. I mean, before the decision is made, we all are thoughtful people, and we all trying to work cordially to work out these problems. This is magnitude here. This is really major.
Well, let's hear a little more of the July 24th City Council meeting, where, again, the issue essentially came from. It was from one person's request.
Right.
So powerful is apparently this Harvey West Business Association. Now, I've also heard that Costco's apparently had its nose in the pie here as well, but that was sort of behind-the-scenes gossip, and I don't have confirmation of that except from, I'd say reliable sources, but you know, I'd like to get more details. Let's hear a little bit more of this tape.
Sure.
Are you suggesting that in the short term,
it's Councilmember Riley,
you think this problem would be really helped along by nothing more than a traffic management plan? That's why you want to talk to the traffic engineer?
Well, the biggest problem right now with the refuse and the bathroom facility kind of thing is that people are there, are in the campers. They don't have bathrooms in those things, folks. And it's, like I said, there were 13 along one block.
Now, David, you have a comment on this. You say that's not accurate?
That's not accurate information. I mean, I would say there may be a vehicle or two without bathroom facilities, but and I'm not disputing what this person is saying about people being excessive about where they do this. But basically, most of us have motorhomes. We're very environmentally cordial, very mental, conscious, and to make this 100% issue of total sanitation for us camping when you can occasionally check out the Harvey West Park sanitation issue. I mean, there's nothing been discussed about all this, but then still the homeless people are the ones being
fried. What do you mean the Harvey West sanitation issue?
There's an issue over there, from my understanding, that where occasionally you can find sewage leak off or overflow right there at Harvey West. So this is
You mean from the city's parks and rec buildings?
This is not just a homeless person, a homeless community activity. I mean, you know, occasionally we drop in sewage right off natural bridges, right into the beach, right into the ocean over here. So
I haven't studied this, but I heard that one of the concerns of Costco's was that they smelled sewage and decided immediately, thank you very much, Mr. Stereotype, to blame it on homeless people. I don't think you would take an issue, David, with the idea that there should be porta-potties and dumpsters put in there, even though there's a bathroom. It's not open 24 hours, right, at Harvey West.
Well, I welcome the idea. I think the more availability, the less need for problems.
Right. Well, that of course, it should have been there after February of 1999. It was mandated along with the downtown porta-potties or bathrooms. Unfortunately, we only got porta-potties, and two of them got pulled out recently. Emily Riley was on that task force, and, you know, she was sort of asking, you know, she doesn't propose bathrooms or even porta-potties. She proposes some traffic management stuff, where clean up or something. So it seems that she is evading the very mandate that she was supposed to be helping fulfill 2 years ago, which doesn't surprise me because Riley is the person who, first of all, said she opposed the sleeping ban, signed the initiatives to end the sleeping ban, and then lo and behold, when Marty Wormhout whispered in her ear, when Andy Schifrin whispered in her ear, when Catherine Byers, all the folks at the center, the SCAN progressive power structure in Santa Cruz, whispered in her ear, then suddenly she wasn't in favor of any of that anymore. In fact, nothing on the sleeping ban, ending the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, has ended, and we haven't seen another bathroom or porta-potty. In fact, we haven't heard a word of protest at the porta-potty she helped set up are being removed without any public hearing or replacement.
And this is all based on the idea of street sweeping? Are we going to, the city's going to fund
homeless
sweeping,
I think is what we got here.
are we going to be, the city's going to fund street sweeping 7 days a week from 5 to 7, only in the Harvey West homeless community area?
You're especially dirty people, David. You got to be realistic.
Maybe
about
we need
this.
More showers. Those showers, those bathrooms out here.
I think we need to kind of rinse the stench of hypocrisy out of the city council chambers, and we need to bring these issues to city council members in a way which they can no longer dodge or duck. I'm really tired of them doing that, because they're probably going to do this from now until eternity, you know, from here to eternity, until people make it, bring it to their attention.
But this was a request of one person.
Another person was speaking to some extent for the Harvey West Business Association, I assume. And actually, I don't have anything personal against Don Hubbard. He's a nice guy. I'm kind of sad that he didn't invite homeless activists.
I think he meant well, and I can appreciate his concern with the health issues. But there's other issues that are being lacking here.
I'm sorry that he didn't invite you and other people who are actually living in the area to come to the meetings to talk with the business association about ways that could, you know, that these problems could be worked out. I mean, I know that was something that I proposed when this organization ROAR a year and a half ago formed, Restore Our American Rights, a sort of a very short-lived vehicular campers group, and now you formed another one, HOW, which, by the way, I didn't form, folks. I got called on this one. I didn't form HOW. I have suggested, and I think that you guys like the idea, you men and women, because they're both men and women in this group, of having a kind of a point person who will field complaints and concerns. So if people from vehicles think that businesses are acting in a nasty way, they can go to this person and say, can you talk to the business? And the people in the businesses think something's wrong, they can come and talk to the person in the vehicle. I mean, sounds to me like the kind of, give and take that we now see returning to the farmer's market. Instead of people getting tickets for drumming, instead of people getting tickets for petitioning, instead of people being run off or threatened or hassled, we're getting this dialogue and then the acknowledgement that things don't always go smoothly, that this is real life, that people are going to have real disputes, there are going to be real problems, and there has to be some kind of real mediation available in those situations. Here's a little more of that tape.
Sign that says no parking from such and such and such and such, or what is it we can do? That's why I'm asking you to tell me and the Harvey West Area Association, what can we do to stop the overnight living out there and the refuse and the drug paraphernalia and all the rest of those. That's all give me a hand here. Okay?
I'd like to go back to oral communication. Next speaker, please. That 2 minutes to our communication.
Hi. My name is Mike Muser. A friend of mine asked me to let the council know that there's a public forum.
And indeed, there is a public forum coming up on the 17th around the Afghani war at the Civic Auditorium. It's going to be a 4-hour forum. I think it's from 6 to 10 or 6:30 to 10:30. I'm looking for a sign here in the studio, and I don't see one, but it should be... someone can call in, we can get that information. That was some of the original discussion on July 24th that I was able to get off of the library tapes. And by the way, if anybody ever wants to go back, you can pay $5 for a city council 90-minute tape, audio tape, or you can go to the library yourself, bring your boombox with you, sit upstairs, and make a copy of the library's tape for free. So that's another possibility in case you're interested. And also, for folks who want to know what's going to be coming on the city council agenda, you can, of course, go on the web, go to the Cruzio site, and then go to the Santa Cruz City site, and you'll be able to find what's coming up on the next city council meeting. There isn't one this Tuesday, but a week from Tuesday, there will be a city council meeting, and that will be an important meeting, and perhaps Hal will be there. I don't know, you guys are talking about doing something there, but also Camp Paradise is going to be there with lots. Apparently, I'm hearing rumblings of some complaints about Camp Paradise, both from the cemetery and from the large apartment complex at the end of the street, not so much about Camp Paradise, but about people on the periphery of Camp Paradise who, you know, having heard that Camp Paradise is a safe zone, kind of tried to find some safe cover where they can sleep without being hassled, and they are not as fastidious about using drugs or not using drugs. Perhaps they don't have access to porta potties, and they don't have the same kind of good organization that Camp Paradise does. I think that one of the values of HOW, Homeless on Wheels, is if you can really get an organization together, you can not only, you know, provide a liaison between businesses, residents, and folks, and vehicular residents, but you can also, maybe you can sort of set up some guidelines for clean camping and clean car camping. I've suggested for years that the city, instead of giving out camping tickets, encourage people to take a course or have some sort of training session on how to do clean camping, and also provide some facilities around that issue. What do you think, David?
I think it's wonderful. I think the general public in itself needs to be a little bit more educated about the plight of the homeless situation, not only for clean camping. I mean, if you realize that, you know, your job might in any moment, say for the Holiday Inn, for example, just dismissed 80 people like that.
Yeah, I think it was 40, but they did dismiss a bunch of people.
So,
was it 80?
Might have been. I don't know. I mean, numbers are irrelevant. If it's one and it happened to be me or you, it's directly affected. You can understand my point, that what do we do now?
What indeed. Well, I think what we need to do now for the moment is take a breather, and so let's take a breather with this. This is coming at us in just a moment. Let me quickly give you the station identification. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. We go from 11 to 1:30 on Sundays, and the call-in number is
427-3772. Al Gore. And I'd like to introduce my lovely wife, Tipper.
Now, I'd like to tell you a little bit more about the real Al Gore. Ladies, it's not so bad to have a man that's a little stiff. I thought he was a dud with no alibi. When I first went out with Al, he was a boring guy. But then he showed me late one night, first impressions can be wrong. He was strong, and he could do it all night long. And now he leads the White House race. Since that night at our convention, when you saw a sucking face, I should have laid down on the stage and let him make sweet love to me. Let you all see our position differs from the GOP. Here's what I mean. Behind the scenes, Al's not a robot. He's a macho sex machine. Don't think he's Mr. Clean like mom and apple pie. He likes tumble. And does he lay down and die?
Oh, no, not I.
Al is alive. Yeah, we're making love most every night. Four times or maybe five. My man is handsome, dark, and tall. How I love his booty call. He likes to jive. Al is alive.
Hey, hey.
And when we go walk through the door, that Lincoln bedroom is not the Clintons anymore. In your White House, make it plain, it's Tipper's dress that's got the stain. I've got the drive, he'll take a dive, but with his wife.
Yeah, maybe a little bit irrelevant now, but hey, here we are anyway, and give us some relevance. Here we are at Free Radio Santa Cruz talking civil rights in the city, and let's turn to what's happening up at one of those folks where poor folks do gather. That's St. Francis Soup Kitchen. And I was up there a couple days ago and got some remarks from some folks, and now you get to hear it.
Into one on October 12th, Friday, we're at the St. Francis Soup Kitchen talking to
Kathy Massey.
And Kathy, you yourself had an interesting encounter with a member of the law enforcement department.
Yes, the city police department. They came and pounded on the door until we finally answered it. We answered it. There was a lady officer there, told us we had to move our vehicle immediately. We told her it couldn't, it had to be towed. She said I had 1 hour to get over there and get somebody to tow it, or she was going to have it towed on me. My vehicle is legally registered. I have a legal driver, and she told us we had to get out. This is like 5:30 in the morning.
Where were you?
I was parked in front of Costco.
How long ago was this?
This was a week ago. And I had moved, so I did tow it on well, they give us a 3-day notice. And I towed it the next day, had it put over on the other side of Costco. Well, they come through 1 o'clock in the morning, beeping horns, the police department did, shaking campers.
Shaking campers.
Shaking campers.
They're just trying to give them a wake-up call.
Yeah. They seem to be harassing, you know, harassing campers now. And the thing is, what they don't realize is we are not camping. This is our home. Because we cannot afford homes in this county because of the rate of rent and deposits and expectations of people. So these are our homes. They're not our campers. They're not our temporary places. They are not our recreation vehicles. These are our homes.
And how long have you been living in Santa Cruz, the general area?
Well, I was born and raised here. And I left for a while and came back a year ago. And I came back because I had kids here. And we had a place, and it was red tag shortly after we got it.
How long ago was that?
That was last October.
So you're not one of these out-of-town campers who came running in because of all the wonderful facilities in Santa Cruz.
No, this is my hometown, and I don't think these people that are moving over here and raising rents and are not from Santa Cruz County has any right to try to run people that are low-income out of Santa Cruz County that are residents.
You also mentioned there's a new group beginning called Homes on Wheels, which I think sounds like something was being done in Santa Barbara as well, a group of vehicular residents all getting together?
Yeah, that's where we came up with the name, because if we're going to represent the same thing, we might as well be called the same thing, except of Santa Cruz County.
Sounds good to me. And you've been talking to folks about this?
Oh, yeah, we've already had one meeting. And that's where we decided, you know, who to get a hold of. This was last Wednesday, and we're making connection with people that know a little bit more about it than we do, like yourself.
Any help I can give, I'd love to help you out, and I'll be at your meeting tonight when you do your Friendship Park meeting.
Cool, thank you.
All right. Okay, it's about 6:10. We're out here at Friendship Park, where the Homeless on Wheels, HOW, the Santa Cruz chapter, I guess formed about a week ago, is meeting. We're talking with
Robert Griffin
and
Emily Gibbs.
And you two folks live in your vehicles, or?
I don't have a vehicle. I can't drive. I'm epileptic, so I live in a very, very tiny tent.
Uh-huh. Officer, arrest her immediately. Bob, you live in your vehicle?
Yes, I do. Yes. I've been here for 3 weeks, and so far I've been harassed since I got here about urinating outside my vehicle, which I haven't. And that's what they're trying to say, that that's why they don't want us around here, because we're urinating outside our vehicles, and we're taking up the space for the parking.
Where good, solid citizens could be parking their vehicles.
Their vehicles, yes, uh-huh, yes.
So now, where did you come from, and why did you come to Santa Cruz?
Actually, I was a native from Santa Cruz. I raised my family here. I worked 7 years out of Salt's Tannery, and I raised my family here, and I got, and I'm a divorcee, and plus, I come back to Santa Cruz because it's more or less like a healing town for me. I come back here and just to kind of get my stuff together and stuff. But lately, I'm like I said, I was going on SSI and stuff. And
you're a man with some disability.
Yes, sir.
What are your disabilities?
I'm blind. I'm going blind, so I lost one eye and this eye is going out. So.
And how long have you been back for 3 weeks?
I have 3 weeks now. Yeah.
How many times have you been stopped by the police?
About 5 times.
Same police officers or different ones?
A couple, yeah, two. One officer was, I don't know his name, but he's retiring in December. And he said he's been trying to get people out of here for 8 years. And he says if it takes, till December, he's going to get us out of here. So he told me that. He put out fire.
Indicated police officer.
Yes, indicated.
So the organization here looks like you got some folks showing up who are actually determined to get together, organize folks who live in their vehicles, whose vehicles are their homes, and because there is the alternative housing around here is rather sparse.
Oh yes. I mean, I don't know the area too well as an RV owner. I don't know where to go to park my RV and be safe. I mean, and right here it's a place where I could go to the shelter and get a meal, and plus have my mail, and plus take care of business, and it's close by. And right here is the only place I know about.
You mean Harvey West Industrial Park?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Now, you live in a tent, and you've been trying to get shelter unsuccessfully?
Yeah, I do.
Tell me about that.
It's
freezing right now. It's only October. I don't get any sleep. I live hidden pretty much, and the bus station over there just keeps me awake all day long. Cleaning their buses, screaming, noises, phone. And then the parties over here with the kids screaming and the traffic. Now I understand why parents complain about traffic, but it's just so noisy.
Are you camping alone or in company?
In company. And
have you been troubled by the police?
No.
Well hidden, is that the deal?
I just got here like 2 months ago. I mean, where put my tent up, but...
Came to Santa Cruz because of the wonderful accommodations? You heard what wonderful things were happening here?
I moved to live with my dad. And he thought it was great.
But you're not living with your dad.
I think it's pretty... I know, you know, it's really great, and I've been here for a while, you know.
And you decided it's good to get together in a union of folks to reassert your rights?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Talk together like this. Yeah, it should definitely be passed to people who understand, you know, what we're talking about.
Your name again is?
Emily Gibbs.
Hey, Emily, thank you.
And that was two folks talking from Homes on Wheels. We've got some more coming up at the Friday meeting, and there'll be another meeting on Monday night at 7 o'clock out at Friendship Garden in Harvey West Park. They've invited anyone to come and chat with them and express sympathy and solidarity, particularly folks who are, who knows, Green Party members or Huff members or interested community members, supporters from Camp Paradise or of Camp Paradise, because it's really a broader struggle. The idea that somehow only the city council is going to get away with helping one small group of people and ignoring the rest of the homeless community, I don't think that really even suits the sentiments of folks at Camp Paradise. I think they feel that this sleeping ban has to go, the blanket ban has to go, the camping ban has to go, although there could be reasonable regulation of camping. And I think supervisorial candidate Michael Schmidt agrees with that position. He's been going door to door, talking to folks about it, also mentioning things like rent control, going up to the university. And I said, if there can be some broad coalition form between students and folks in vehicles and folks in Camp Paradise and progressive people from the Green Party and from the Peace and Freedom Party and from other groups, I think there's a real chance of changing things here in Santa Cruz. And for those who are interested, I think a good place to start is with folks who are actually facing this crisis right now, whether it's Camp Paradise, which is easy to find in case you've forgotten where that is. It's out by Denny's on Ocean Street. You go to Denny's on Ocean, you go down Felker Street, which is on one side of Denny's, all the way to the San Lorenzo River. It's one block. And on your right, there's a path goes under the bridge, and you go to up the river till you about 400 yards, and there suddenly is Camp Paradise. And interestingly enough, Ed Porter made some ridiculous comments about this issue, which I think we actually have on tape. We're going to play after we've done a little more of Homes on Wheels, denouncing what he saw around the periphery of Camp Paradise. It sounded like a politician's speech about against prostitution, you know, on the eve of an election or something. It's a kind of, it's a sort of a smear speech. But anyway, let's hear a little bit more about Homes on Wheels, and then we'll get to some of these other matters as well.
Well, police officers double parked here on the road, like R-146, are examining a BMW.
Hearing is me actually approaching the meeting. There was a couple of police officers were looking at a vehicle, not a homeless vehicle, actually looking inside it, checking things out. I have no idea what they were doing, and they chose not to tell me. But it didn't seem to be too particularly relevant to the subject matter at hand, and so I proceeded on to the Homeless on Wheels meeting. And sorry to do my editing on the air, folks. That's the way it often is in this show. Bear with us.
Have a good evening, guys.
We're here at the barbecue section of Howe, Homeless on Wheels, and the master barbecuer is here looking through his papers. Your name, sir?
Edward Meneses.
And Ed, we ran into each other about a month and a half ago, and you were you were parked on this street about a block away from here, and I guess your brother was also parked on the street?
That's right. We've both been here for approximately 2 months now. After our business was shut down due to zoning restrictions on the lot where we had that business on 41st and Portola.
And that business was?
The Last Detail. It's an auto detailing business. We've been at that location for 6 years. A lot owned by Harry Jenkins, who owns the Spa Fitness Centers, Capitola Man of the Year. And for reasons I won't get into, the county sent people who were not really willing to go and harass the owner of that property. But to make a long story short, the property was put on lien for having storage there after having had storage there for the last 25 years of RVs and whatnot.
Harass you for storing stuff there?
They harassed him. Right. And in the interim, the zoning was off somehow after all these years. And after they had issued me a business license to be able to operate there, my zoning was off and everybody's zoning was off. And to make a long story short, that whole section is now closed. All the businesses around there, except the chiropractor, thank God, who's a good man, everybody's gone.
Now, was there some ulterior motive? Were they trying to put in a shopping center, or was it just incompetence?
No, it wasn't that at all. Somebody complained, and what it was the former manager got fired, and he went and complained and just crawled up everyone's, you know what, until some action was taken against this person. And then Mr. Jenkins tried to sell the land for a considerable sum of money.
Jenkins was the landlord?
Yes, and the landowner. And the sale fell through because of zoning. So, you know, who knows what's up with that? That's a whole other issue. But we lost our long-time business and our tenancy.
You moved everything into your vehicle?
Into vehicles, right. Several vehicles. Two of which have been confiscated, one a big truck, which just yesterday was auctioned off because it was impossibly high to get it out even after the first day.
How much would it have cost?
$375 the first day.
Who was the towing company?
That was North County Towing.
Of course.
Then the next day was another $75 and on and on. Yesterday they wanted thousands of dollars. And I just wasn't in the position to do that, so I lost my truck. I was able to retrieve my property, all of my tools and equipment. The county had towed off another small trailer that I had that had been blocked by people. In any event, I lost a lot of computer stuff and paperwork. And all of these are things that I can overcome.
But they don't make you too happy.
They don't make me at all happy. And what really irks me is the constant harassment and the fact that, you know, I am able to overcome this and we'll move ahead, and, you know, I've already forgotten about it. But many other people are not able to do that. They cannot overcome the difficulties for whatever their situation is, whether they're disabled, they're mentally incapacitated, they haven't got a vehicle, or their vehicle breaks down. And, you know, I want to point one thing out. This transition, because that's what it's called when you're in this stage of homelessness, is something that magnifies itself rapidly. You know, first you become homeless, and in our case, we have trailers and a place to bed ourselves and sleep. Many people don't have that. They're way extremely homeless. However, those of us that do have those things have obviously shown some kind of responsibility in order to attain that and keep functioning with those things. And when they take those things away from either us or whoever that's in our environment, that has got to be a tremendous loss for the people.
And burden.
And burden, I mean, because they can't climb out. Imagine this. First of all, they lost their homes because they couldn't climb out of the ever-ending escalation of the rents that are now happening. Now, I happen to be a lifelong resident here. I was born in Santa Cruz. 25 years ago, I worked for Green Giant Company, 1974, so that was longer than that, but, and I worked there for several years, and I was making money. I was working hard and making good money. I had a decent income, I had a nice car, I had a good place to live. People now are making less money than I made then, and they have higher rents to pay. How can they do that? I'm an employer, or had been an employer, and you know, I can't even forgive myself if I can't pay someone less than $10 an hour, a full-time employee, a person that's loyal to me, that comes to work every day and puts in his time and works. How can they survive after taxes on that? $10 an hour. If they have a wife and children, how can they possibly do it? They can't. They can only do it if, in fact, they're living with other people, their friends, their relatives, they're sharing housing. You know, and this is all the basic status of Santa Cruzans now. They cannot survive. Most 13 years ago, I took the CPAC course taught by Steve Stiles at Bethany Bible College. It must have been 12, 13 years ago, long time ago. It was his first one, and at that time, I learned that most people then were three paychecks away from being homeless. I imagine that figure's got to be 1.5, 2 weeks at this time from losing their homes. That means that everyone who is affluent in this city, and you know, and thank God that there are those people here that are residents that have become affluent.